This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. You can find our podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. In the political tug of war over healthcare, two words have been playing a major role.
Having pre-existing conditions.
Pre-existing condition.
Pre-existing condition.
Have a pre-existing condition.
Pre-existing conditions.
Pre-existing condition.
Pre-existing conditions.
And there's good reason these words keep coming up. Before the Affordable Care Act, people with all kinds of illnesses had massive problems getting health insurance, and addressing that issue was central to President Obama's legislation. As Republicans shaped their own health care act in the last few months, President Trump was quick to reassure Americans that this is an important issue for him, too.
First, we should ensure that Americans with pre-existing conditions have access to coverage and that we have a stable transition for Americans currently enrolled in the health care exchanges.
The GOP's health bill failed to make it to a vote, but in the final hours of congressional debates, pre-existing conditions bubbled up again in questions about what kind of health services insurers must cover. But how did they become such a huge part of America's health care crisis? Alana Gordon guides us through the twists and turns.
For starters, this issue is not only complicated, it's been a long time in the making. And to explore why, let's switch gears for just a minute. Go back in time and talk about firehouses.
You would think of the volunteer fire departments of the 19th century.
This is John Bertko. He's not a fireman. He's in insurance. More on that soon. But first,
you couldn't put out a house fire yourself. And so you'd contribute both time and money, and the community would buy a fire engine.
Hopefully, nothing would ever happen to your house. But if it did, the trucks and hoses were on hand to help. Bertko says in the early 20th century, health insurance kind of worked in a similar way. In communities around the country, the main doctor and hospital groups started up Blue Cross and Blue Shield nonprofits. These blues, as they were called,
would take a certain small amount of money per month, and then for that amount of money, they would guarantee that a person could come in and have a doctor treat them, or that they could get into a hospital and their hospital bills would be paid for.
At this point, the notion of pre-existing conditions wasn't really seen as a thing, largely because the blues were regulated by each state as a community benefit.
And that meant that your profits were limited, that your goal would be to provide healthcare services at the lowest possible cost to members of the community.
Around World War II, the health insurance landscape grew, as did healthcare itself. The Blues were still the insurance administrators, but coverage largely became defined by your employer. There were wage controls at the time, so employers and workers negotiated an alternative benefit, healthcare. Keep in mind, these were often big companies with a lot of employees.
And so the risk would be shared across, say, 1,000 or 10,000 or 1 million people.
There's a reason John Bertko knows a lot about this.
I've been an actuary for 40 years.
For Humana, for the feds, and now for the state of California. He's basically the guy that tries to predict who's likely to get sick and what those costs will be in any given year. It's important to note that this is really, really hard to do. But first, back to this history lesson.
The Harry S. Truman Library at Independence, Missouri.
In the mid-60s, Medicaid and Medicare were signed into law by Lyndon Johnson.
Make the Medicare bill a part of Social Security coverage.
By that time, something else was really gaining traction.
For-profit insurance companies decided to jump in, and they immediately recognized some people were much more likely to use services. They might have some conditions already, or they might be prone to have conditions.
The for-profits realized they could make more money if they only covered healthy people and the people who were most likely to stay healthy.
Yep, that's right. And the name of that science is underwriting.
That tricky practice of trying to identify who's most likely to get sick and need costly care, and then factor that into the price and scope of their health coverage. And this is where we see pre-existing conditions really take hold. To keep up, the Blues got on board.
So the company started out by having a list of about 20 conditions.
I had a stroke.
I have kidney disease.
I had breast cancer.
I have HIV.
And these would be what I would call very, very serious conditions.
I have a rare heart condition.
I have prostate cancer.
I have lupus.
I have diabetes.
I've been in drug and alcohol treatment.
I have sleep apnea.
But as they found out how well this worked, the list got longer.
I'm pregnant.
I'm thinking about getting pregnant.
And longer and more complicated.
I have asthma.
I have allergies.
So that by the time of the 21st century, the list would be as many as 400 different conditions of varying difficulties.
I have high blood pressure.
I have acne.
400?
Yes.
Now, the feds placed protections on people who already had coverage through their work. But some Americans rely on the individual market. Small farmers, the self-employed, and people like Carl Ugin from Littlestown, Pennsylvania. In the early 80s, his situation changed overnight.
The company I worked for called us all to the time clock early one morning and told us that within 48 hours, the entire company would be packed on trucks and moved away to Florida. So with no notice, you know, basically I had no job.
And no guaranteed employer-based health insurance for himself and his family. Carl got a temporary gig as a florist. He loved it, and he started his own business.
And we did custom silk work. You bring me your wallpaper and I'll make an arrangement to match it.
As for insurance, he went directly to the local Blue Cross Blue Shield and got a small business plan that covered his family. Without being part of that big employer pool, it was a bit of a sticker shock. But business was good, and he managed. But then...
Yeah, about 10 years ago, my house caught fire.
Not literally, but Carl was diagnosed with chronic liver disease, hepatitis B. It was a complete surprise. But then he realized his work years ago as a member of the volunteer fire department might have been the cause.
And this was before the time of breathing masks when you did CPR or gloves. So I was in constant contact with body fluids.
He says the specialty drugs helped manage his condition, but cost thousands of dollars. His insurance covered it. But then he says some unexpected things started happening during the annual policy signups.
Insurance renewals went way up.
And the cost of those renewals kept going up while covering less. Eventually, it became unaffordable. Carl says he had no choice but to drop his family's insurance.
I was devastated because I didn't know when my liver might fail.
According to our insurance guy, John Birdko, Carl's experience was not uncommon.
And many companies, whether they were Blue Cross Blue Shield companies or for-profit companies, did similar things over the last 20 years or so before.
Drumroll, please. Act 2 in our history lesson.
The Affordable Care Act.
Thank you, everybody.
It was March 23rd, 2010. When President Barack Obama signed what's become known as Obamacare into law.
This year, tens of thousands of uninsured Americans with pre-existing conditions.
People like Carl couldn't be denied coverage or faced hefty price increases because they had a health issue. And that coverage had to cover certain things. The idea was this could work for insurers so long as young, healthy people also signed up to spread the risk. This is where the whole individual mandate stems from. Buy insurance or face a fine. Still, Tom Miller believes the ACA placed too much emphasis on pre-existing conditions.
Well, the pre-existing condition issue was used as a marketing device in order to sell a lot of other policies.
Miller is a health insurance expert with the Enterprise Institute, a think tank based in Washington, D.C. He says the issue is that healthcare is just expensive for everyone. And he thinks this emphasis on pre-existing conditions deflected that bigger problem and created other ones. Not enough healthy people enrolled. Some markets, like in Arizona, lost money. The premiums went way up.
When you make insurance much more comprehensive and also try to hide the price of that insurance and the cost of it from as many people as possible, thinking that it'll be somehow be financed below the table, then insurance as a market breaks down. And the question is what type of mangled political mess we're going to try to live with in order to hide more costs.
He believes one answer for pre-existing conditions are these things called high-risk pools. These were around pre-Obamacare as state insurance options for people who couldn't get affordable care because of a pre-existing condition. Karen Politz is with the Kaiser Family Foundation and could not disagree more. She says states who tried these pools faced major challenges. They cost a lot, both for the state and for the patient. And in many states, there was this.
The one that usually surprises people is that these state high-risk pool programs would exclude coverage for the pre-existing condition that made you eligible in the first place.
This wasn't a permanent thing, but it often meant necessary care for a health condition, like those $1,000 health meds, like the ones Carl needed for his hepatitis B. He'd have to wait 6 months to a year before the pool would cover it. Politz acknowledges the ACA has had some growing pains. A lot of healthy people didn't sign up. The current fine of about $700 just wasn't a big enough stick. And coverage for some people was still unaffordable. At the same time, more chronically ill people, like Carl, signed up.
It was transformative. It completely changed the nature of the individual health insurance market. It completely changed the business model of insurance companies that sold in that market.
The uninsured rate is also way down, as is national health spending. And employer-based premiums have risen at a slower rate than they did before the ACA was enacted. Politz was hopeful it would get better. But now we've reached our final act.
Tonight, I am also calling on this Congress to repeal and replace Obamacare.
The GOP's recent efforts to replace Obamacare did not gain enough support to make it to an important vote. But proponents have emphasized that pre-existing conditions will be covered in any kind of replacement. Still, one issue that keeps coming up is what will be covered and how that will be paid for. That latest proposal had its own version of the individual mandate incentive, a surcharge on people who don't sign up for continuous coverage. There was a section creating a federal fund for states to use in a number of ways, from providing extra support to insurers who cover more patients with pre-existing conditions to bringing back high-risk pools. It's something House Speaker Paul Ryan was all about at a recent CNN town hall.
State high-risk pools are a smarter way of guaranteeing coverage for people with pre-existing conditions.
Even though the plan has been tabled, the challenges of managing pre-existing conditions don't appear to be going away. So how might this affect Carl? Actually, he just turned 65 and moved into a different neighborhood of coverage, a big one that we all pay into and all join. Medicare.
Medicare is a pretty reliable fire company. We haven't had any troubles with that at all.
For The Pulse, I'm Alana Gordon.